Well, hello, Broadway. I'm Wendell again. I'm your Pathway pastor here at Broadway. It's good to be here with you today. I know Halloween is come and gone, but since we're in the proximity thereof, I want to do something really scary for you this morning before we get started. So I have no notes. That could be a scary proposition. You might want to get an extra sandwich to eat. This may go on for 2 or 3 hours. Not really. Anyway, that is my feeble attempt at humor again. And I'm not able to see whether you're laughing or not, but I hope you got a chuckle out of that. Anyway, we're on Matthew chapter 18. Lewis is recording me and he's not laughing at all, so this is not a good sign. we are looking at Matthew 18 today. That's the assigned passage, the one that we heard from. And he's talking about somebody in your group, your body, your church, who has missed the mark. That's the word for sin there. They missed the mark. They tried, but they missed it. And life gets sketchy in the body. And so Jesus talks about what do you do in cases like this. And he says, you know, if you're you go to them one-on-one, if that doesn't work, then you take somebody else, maybe a couple. If that doesn't work, then you take the whole church. And if that doesn't work, then you basically show them the door and let them go out and think about what they've done, let them come to their senses, kind of like the prodigal son did. And then he adds some other things that we'll talk about later that you heard in the passage that was written. But this is an excerpt from a chapter that kind of has a theme, and the theme is how do we handle life when it gets sketchy, when there's sin, when there's stumbling, when there's wandering, when somebody doesn't get it, when somebody misses the mark. When life gets sketchy, how do we handle that? And these days we're talking about prayer. So how does prayer fit into that? And so toward the very end, we're going to talk about how prayer fits in. But let's just look at the context of this chapter. And I'm going to have to go fast because it's got 3 or 4 stories that Matthew fits into this. It starts out with somebody asking, who's the greatest in the kingdom? And Jesus says, it's the children. You got to become like children. And then he starts talking about, don't make one of these little ones stumble, because if you do, it'd be worse for you to have a giant millstone, not the routine, regular, everyday one, but a giant millstone tied about your neck, not thrown off a two-story building, not thrown off the top of a hill, but thrown in the sea, which for a Jew would be just the worst that they could imagine. And then he goes on, talks about, and if you have problems stumbling, if there's any part of your body that's causing you to stumble, your eye, your hand, whatever, start removing body parts. Sketchy, you know. Making a little one stumble, sketchy. Me stumbling, sketchy. And then he goes to another story, and he talks about one sheep who wanders off, and the shepherd leaves the 99 in the fold and goes finds the wandering sheep. A wandering sheep, sketchy. And then we get to the passage that we heard read today, where somebody messes up and you have to deal with that. We've talked about that. But then he ends the chapter 18 of Matthew. He ends the chapter by talking about a guy who worked for a master and he ran up this huge, humongous debt. Impossible to pay back. And so he goes back to the master trying to renegotiate the payment plans. You know, let's restructure this, how we're going to pay this back. And the master does something he didn't expect. He said, guess what? You're forgiven. The debt's forgiven. You don't have to pay any of it back. It didn't compute with the guy. Either he was too arrogant, he was too thick, I don't know, but he didn't get it. And so he goes straightway out on the street and he finds somebody who owes him a penny or two and starts to strangle him to get the money out of him so he can pay the debt back that he no longer owes. And the master hears about it and says, this won't do. The guy needs some time out. Send him to jail. Let him think about this. So there you go. Machine gun fashion, all of chapter 18 of Matthew. All right, so I think what we need to do is to kind of break this down before we understand how prayer fits into this. In almost every case, Jesus goes to extreme measures in response to every one of these. The little child, he caused him to stumble. Giant millstone. There were 2 different kinds of millstones. Giant millstone cast in the street. See, extreme. Stumbling yourself. Start whacking off body parts. Not literally, but he goes to the extreme to make the point. Sheep wandering, single, one sheep, not a bunch, one sheep wandering away from the fold. Leave the 99, not a good business practice. Very affectionate for the one, not a good business practice as a shepherd. You put these in jeopardy to go get that one. Go to extreme measures. Brother or sister in the body sins, misses the mark, what do you do? Go to extreme measures if you have to. Enlist the entire church to come and talk to them if you have to. And if that doesn't work, then show them the door for a while. The last story in the thing, the servant who can't pay back that, or doesn't have to pay back the debt, but thinks he still does. And the master says, if you don't get forgiveness, you need to go out and think about this. Extreme measures, don't go sit under a tree, go to jail and think about this. God is serious about sketchiness. What do you think? In every case, God pulls out the big guns to deal with, at least in this passage, to deal with sketchiness. When we mess up, when we miss the mark, when we wander, when we stumble, I've just lumped them all into one bag and called them sketchiness. God goes to great extreme measures when he deals with this. I'm not so good with dealing with sketchiness, either both in myself and in the church. And the church really has a long-standing history of not doing well with sketchiness. There was a long-standing Broadway member. He's since gone to be with Jesus. I remember sitting with him in a conversation once, and he just casually said, kind of in shame, kind of in remorse, he said, you know, we shoot our wounded and we eat our young. And I thought, oh my gracious. A little blunt, a little rude, but I thought, that is kind of the history of what we do in the church. We don't know how to handle sketchiness. We want to reject them, we want to fix them, we want to whatever. And it tends to go two ways. Either it goes outward and we blame and we shame and we ostracize and we hyper-fix and we hyper-tend to, tend to their need or tend to their issue or whatever. And we go way overboard and we get little groups of people together and we talk about it and we decide the heavy hand that we need to use on these people. That's the outward thing. And we do shoot our wounded and eat our young sometimes. But then the other thing is we tend to go inward. And so we start blaming, what did I do? We start to shame ourselves and we start to feel guilty or we start to feel angry or we start to feel afraid. I wouldn't know what to say if I went to confront them. And so we get all wound up and crazy on the inside about how we're supposed to deal with the sketchiness in this other person. So the church does not have a real good history with this. In fact, I don't know about you, but as I thought through that chapter 18 of Matthew, I started to feel a little bit squeamish inside. I wanted to kind of shut it and just walk away and say, let's talk about this some other time. Sketchiness is not something that we cuddle up to. We really don't want to deal with it. But this passage, Matthew's passage, indicates that God dives right in. God is not afraid of or put off by our sketchiness. I guess he programmed or he understood it was part of the plan. The forbidden fruit deal didn't surprise him. He saw it coming. And so he's been right with us the whole time in our sketchiness. And he doesn't run from us. And he doesn't beat us black and blue over it. And he doesn't, but he's serious about it. If this passage doesn't tell us anything else, it says that God is very, very serious about this. And so he says, you know, when you we go to these measures to help people out of the sketchiness, these drastic measures. This is where we would like to end because it all makes sense. But then there's a part of the passage that you heard read that I haven't talked about yet. And that's when Jesus started saying, guess what? What you bind here on earth is bound in heaven. And what you loose here on earth is loosed in heaven. And he said, furthermore, whatever you ask in my name, the Father will give it to you. And then he went on to say, it only takes a couple of you being together in my name and I'm in. It's as if God is saying, I know you have problems dealing with sketchiness, so we'll partner with this. I'm all in with you as we deal with the wandering, the stumbling, the rebellion, the arrogance, the stubbornness, the missing the mark, whatever it is, I'm with you as we deal with this. And so what hits me here is the way he trusts us. We don't trust ourselves, but he trusts us in this partnership with him. And he says, what you bind will be bound. What you loose will be loosed. And he issues us a blank check. What you ask in my son's name, All of the power, all of the wisdom, all of the greatness of heaven is now at your disposal in helping this person who has stumbled or wandered or is in a sketchy situation. I'm all in. I've issued you a blank check and endorsed, signed it. You fill in the amount, and I'm there to help you with these. So this partnership is real to God. God's not messing with us. God's not playing with us. This is real to God. This partnership is absolutely real, and he invests himself in it and invites us to walk with him. So we are the ones who reach out and find the wandering sheep. We're the ones who go to a church member who missed the mark. We're the ones who help the guy who doesn't understand forgiveness understand forgiveness. We're the ones who do that with him. Now I want to go another direction. I've worked on this passage for, studied it, looked at it for a couple weeks now, and I had it all reversed. And I was going to talk about this at the first, and I thought, no, I need to talk about this at the last. Let's take a step back and think about who wrote this. Matthew wrote this. Matthew lived in sketchy land most of his life. Matthew was a tax collector. He was a Jew taking money from Jews to give to Rome. He might as well just wear a placard that says, "Hi, I'm sketchy." When he came into the mix, it was not like he had some sort of hidden arrogance or some sort of closet grudge against somebody, or he was, you know, some latent stubbornness or whatever. No, he wore his sketchiness on the outside. Everybody saw it. Can you imagine when Jesus picked him, brought him back, you know, to supper that night with these hardworking blue-collar fishermen who slaved all day to provide for their families and worked honest days, one right after another, and in comes Matthew. "Hi, I'm Matthew. I have cheated you for years with your taxes." He got what it was to be sketchy. He understood that. He understood the shame of it. He understood the confusion of it. He understood being rejected. But he also understood what it was to be the lone sheep and have the shepherd come out after him and bring him back in. He also knew what it was to be the one who missed the mark and had the Son of God come and say, "Let's talk about the truth in this matter." And his life was absolutely transformed into a disciple who wound up writing one of the most important pieces of biblical writing we have in the Gospel of Matthew. It's important to know who wrote this. He understood sketchy, and he understood the transformation between sketchy over to truth and over to belonging in the kingdom. Who's the greatest in the kingdom? He was out of the kingdom, now he's in the kingdom, and he understands what that feels like to make that shift. It makes me think of the Apostle Paul. I used to think he was playing when he wrote, you know, "I'm the greatest of all sinners." I was like, Muhammad Ali, I'm the greatest. Well, St. Paul, whatever you want to call him, stands up and says, "I'm the greatest of all sinners," you know? And I thought, well, yeah, you're just saying that to kind of identify with us lowly people down here. No, I think he really meant it. I think he got it. I think that's why he was able to write like he did about grace and love, is because he got what it meant to be sketchy. I kill people for a living. I have people killed for a living. That's sketchy. And to be transformed on the inside. I think Peter understood this. "I'll never deny you. I'll never deny you." Three times he did. He got what it was to feel sketchy, to miss the mark. I'm shooting for not denying, and I hit it square on. I missed my intended mark. That's why I'm the leader of Pathway. It's because I'm the biggest screw up in the room. This is what God does in his ministry. He takes that which is sketchy and he transforms it into something that's helpful and nurturing and mentoring. And look at all these guys that God has used. I want to close with this, and then we'll pray for a second. In Pathway, we have two core values, two things we go by. Pathways on Sunday night, Food and Fellowship at 5. This is an advertisement, by the way. Food and Fellowship at 5. Pathway at 6, great music, have sharing and lessons. But we have two core values that we that we go by in Pathway. One is be real, number one. Number two is be loved. That's it. So when I think of the magic that's happened in Pathway and I think of the lives that have been transformed, it's not because we fixed anybody. It's not because we manipulated anybody. It's not because we bullied them or corrected them or reprogrammed them. It's none of that. The magic that's happened in Pathway, the transformation between sketchiness and solid ground that's happened in Pathway, simply happened because they showed up with all of their sketchiness. They wore it just like Matthew's placard, "Hi, I'm sketchy." We show up sketchy, and then we're just loved. And it's the love that caused the shepherd to leave the 99 and go after the one, this reckless love that we sing about. It's this love that transforms a heart and brings us back from wandering, that helps us up off the ground when we stumble, that helps us hit the mark when we've been missing it. All these scenarios that Matthew's laid out, it's love that transforms us from sketchy to solid. That's what does it. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you so much for the stories you told, the truth of them, the compassion of them, the passion in your heart as you told them. Thank you for guys like Matthew, who you intentionally picked and you intentionally and carefully and beautifully transformed. And now he can write these things that can be passed down through all these centuries, and they can help us see how you are not good with our sketchiness and you want to love us out of it. So thank you for being our God. Thank you for loving us just the way we are and never being satisfied with us not being healthy. Thank you. And we'll talk to you later. Thanks for joining us. Good to see you. No, you see me.